What are your favorite historic sites in New York City? Maybe you're partial to places like the Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn, or the Pepsi sign in Long Island City, or the Bergdorf Goodman building in Manhattan. Well, believe it or not, these places haven't been designated as official New York City landmarks yet. According to the New York City Landmarks Preservation Commission, there's a tremendous backlog of sites, like the ones I just mentioned, that have been flagged for review for many years. Meenakshi Srinivasan is the chair of the LPC, and she joins us now, along with Margaret Newman, the executive director of the Municipal Art Society, and they're here to explain how this backlog situation is developed and also to how a building becomes landmark. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
And if you, my listeners, have a question for the chair of the Landmarks Preservation Commission or the executive director of the Municipal Arts Society about landmark designation and that process, we will be taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Meenakshi, the Landmarks Preservation Commission made headlines last week when it proposed to decalendar 96 places, buildings, and structures that were being considered for landmark status. How does the calendaring process work?
Okay, well, calendaring is just one part of the designation process. In its simplest terms, it allows commission staff to put an item or a place on the docket for the commission to consider for designation. So it's the first step in the designation process. It's put on a docket. It then goes through a public hearing process, and then it goes for vote, and the commission may adopt it.
How does it wind up on the docket in the first place? Does the owner, is that the person or the group that has to propose it?
No, actually, the designation, the items that go on the calendar come from many sources. So the agency has its own research staff that does surveys of neighborhoods and identifies potential historic resources. We receive many requests from community groups and preservationists asking us to look and evaluate areas. And then we also have a request for evaluation process, which allows any member of the public to identify a building or a neighborhood that they think warrants designation. And so the commission staff will then look at this group and identify whether they are meritorious, and then working through our priorities, we'll identify what should come before the calendar.
The list of buildings and sites that the LPC proposed to decalendar had all been on the list for 5 years or more, and some have been there for more than 20 years.
Right.
That's an incredible long time. Why would something be put aside again and again for over 20 years?
Right. And I think that's sort of that was the issue at hand, that the agency over time has had a backlog of about 95 properties that go back from 2010 all the way back to 1966. And most of them, about 80% of them, are 20 years old, and about 60% are 30 years old. I think when I came on board in the last couple of months, I thought it was imperative for the agency to really look at its resources and how to deploy them in an effective manner. The intent was really to look at what we have in our roster right now and how to efficiently move those through the process. These items that have been on the calendar for decades have been not a priority and have been overlooked by commission after commission and administration after administration.
They fell into your lap.
That they fell into my lap. And I think the intent was really to try and find a simple manner in which these properties can be removed from the calendar, but give great discretion for the agency to reconsider them in the future. And I think that was the larger goal. And I think we're still committed to deal with this backlog. But given that many issues were raised in this process, we're obviously in a mode to hear comments as well.
My guests are Meenakshi Srinivasan, chair of the New York City Landmarks Commission, and Margaret Newman, executive director of the Municipal Arts Society. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Margaret, why did the Municipal Arts Society oppose the potential decalendaring of these sites?
Well, there are a couple of things to keep in mind. First of all, I think the question, your first question about how things get on the list is a really important one. And MAS, along with a number of other organizations that look at entire neighborhoods, that look at the whole city to see what do we want to keep? Why would we... What are the things that are important to us? What contribute to our neighborhoods? So MAS, for instance, in the recent East Midtown proposed rezoning, came up with a list of buildings that we thought were worthy of landmark status. So we will contribute to that calendaring process. As to why we opposed this recent action, things don't end up on that calendar by accident, and we felt strongly that they were there for a reason. And so removing them in a sort of quick and dirty fashion was not something we thought was a positive move for the city.
Doesn't the Municipal Arts Society have a special reason for being concerned because it helped create the LPC and the Landmarks Preservation Law?
Yes. Since its founding in the late 19th century, MAS has been very active in the preservation movement and, in fact, was one of the critical organizations in getting the Landmarks Law passed. So we have a special – it's near and dear to our hearts, and we're especially concerned about how it's implemented and how it's carried out.
Do we know how many preserved landmarks there are in New York City?
Well, maybe I can answer that. So it's an interesting thing. You have this backlog that goes back to 1966. But if we look at what this agency has achieved over the last 50 years, it's enormous. We have 31,000 buildings that we protect. That includes close to 130 historic districts.
So that means a block or even a whole area.
Yes, there are multiple historic districts that cover many buildings. Some are small, that may be 15 to 20, but some are large as close to about 1,000 buildings. So they vary in size. We have 117 interior landmarks. We have 10 scenic landmarks, which are typically their parks. And then we have about 1,300 individual designations. And this has been done over a period of time of 50 years. So those are the ones that are designated, and much of our resources actually goes towards continuing to protect and preserve these buildings. And then, of course, we have many items and historic districts that are on our roster right now that we want to move forward with. And then, of course, we have new requests that come every day.
What are the criteria for granting landmark status to a building? Does it have to be over a certain age, have distinguishing architectural features, be important historically?
All of the above. They have to have be a minimum of 30 years old. They should have architectural or historical cultural significance, and they're more nuanced when it comes to individual designations versus historic districts. In the case of historic districts, you should have a collection of buildings that reflect a similar style or period in architecture that is cohesive and that creates a sense of place.
Sam Roberts had an article in today's New York Times about a brick row house on Lexington Avenue that is the site of a spice shop and a deli, but is historically significant because it was where President Chester Allen Arthur, was inaugurated. Margaret, should a site like that be landmarked even though it's a rather undistinguished building?
Well, that's a really complicated question and probably why we're sitting here today. I think there are, as Meenakshi says, there are architectural criteria, and every designated property has a rather lengthy report that goes along with it, and you know, people weigh in on whether it has significance. There are many things as we move forward that have sort of sentimental value, if you will, historical value that is other than in the actual architectural features. So I think we've had a lot of those recently where people are very concerned about these things in their neighborhood because they have other types of meaning.
Is there a drawback to designating a lot of places landmarks? Does it hinder new development, which has been part of the reason New York has continued to thrive?
Well, that's another question that'll probably, if we have any listeners from some of our real estate community, they've been arguing that it does, in fact, deter development. But I think it also adds to the value of neighborhoods to have designated properties. It also preserves our history in a way that we really want to see.
Now, if something is on the calendar, okay, you say what you want to say.
I just wanted to comment on the issue of whether it deters development. The buildings and the neighborhoods that we regulate, any kind of changes to them are regulated by our staff and sometimes come before the commission. Overall, the intent is not to stop development, but to ensure that development is respectful to the historic fabric and allow for changes that would be appropriate. I don't see that development and preservation sometimes cannot go hand in hand.
What happens if something is on the calendar and stays there for 20 years or so? Can the owners do stuff until it winds up being decided upon?
I think it's important to sort of understand what it means when a building is calendared and what jurisdiction the agency really has over it. So technically and administratively, it is a way of identifying that a building is on a docket and that will have a public hearing and then go to its designation. In the interim, as we see with this list, is that ultimately the commission has no jurisdiction over these properties legally. In the 80s, we worked with the Department of Buildings to create a period of 40 days in which if these buildings had any alterations or permits associated with it, there would be a stay and it would allow the Landmarks Commission to look at it and designate it. In reality, that really hasn't happened. I think there's only been one situation where the commission has gone in for a building that's been calendared and rushed to designate it.
But I think that the sort of short answer, though, is that if something is on the calendar, it has a very limited protection, which is afforded by the fact that they can't get a permit until Landmarks has opined one way or the other. You either let it go, you say, we're not going to act on this, or we are going to act on it. So you have that 40-day period, which is something. It's not, you know, it's not full protection, but it means there's a public discussion. I think this is one of the reasons that all of the groups, including ours, were very upset about this decalendaring process, because I think it's something that if you suddenly overnight erase, you know, the ability to comment without full consideration, then I think you've taken away something that is, you know, 20, 30 years worth of importance. So I think it's not like cleaning a closet, which is sort of what we thought this kind of amounted to.
Although there are sort of two standpoints to that. One is that, first of all, the agency does have very limited jurisdiction. So it doesn't really, after a 40-day period, stop property owners from doing whatever they want to with their properties. So that's one thing. And in fact, the city's resources, I think philosophically, should go towards the buildings that are really that are designated. That is what our mandate is. I think what we've seen over time is that, in fact, buildings that have been decalendered don't necessarily result in demolitions. This is a practice that several commissions have done before, and as a result of that, we haven't seen whole-scale demolitions. In fact, many of those buildings have then come back to the calendar, and the commission has the discretion to designate them in the future. I think what's happened over here is trying to strike the right balance, which is how to move forward with a host of projects that warrant designation and are asked for right now, and at the same time, be able to address a backlog that after at some point when we're talking about 30, 40, and 50 years is, I believe, very problematic.
We have been receiving lots of calls and comments from our listeners. Mm-hmm. Most of them are asking why not this place or that place.
Right.
And we'll address some of those after we take a little break.
Okay.
And also find out, what happens if St. John the Divine isn't designated as a landmark? They're not about to knock down the fourth largest church in the world, are they? But we'll address that in some other issues right after we take this break from this conversation with Meenakshi Srinivasan, the chair of the New York City Landmarks Commission, and Margaret Newman, executive director of the Municipal Arts Society. Our number here, 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We're talking about landmarking, what gets landmarked, what doesn't, the process itself, with Margaret Newman, executive director of the Municipal Arts Society, and Meenakshi Srinivasan, who is the chair of the New York City Landmarks Commission, and we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. If you have some suggestions of things that you would like to have seen landmarked, you can also tweet us at Leonard Lopate. Tweet in the name of the thing that you think should have been landmarked if it isn't already. And we'll take some calls now. Our first caller is Michael from Harlem. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm very concerned because if you look in Harlem, the Renaissance Casino was calendared in 1991. In 2007, a group of high-powered politicians went down with the Abyssinian Baptist Church to request that it be taken off the calendar. It was taken off the calendar, and now it is going to be destroyed. And that is what is likely to happen to those other buildings if they are taken off the calendar. They will either be adversely altered or destroyed, and they are now offered a modicum of protection because politicians like David Dinkins and former Parks Commissioner Gordon Davis and C. Virginia Fields and Scott Stringer went down and said the best way to save this building is to not have it landmarked. It is going to be destroyed. And the city council members and other politicians ally themselves with the real estate industry, and they say you should not protect these buildings. And rather than overturning the designation, which they have the authority to do after it's been designated, they pressure the Landmarks Commission to not go ahead and designate the building. And that is so wrong and is endangering
our city. Okay, well, let's let Meenakshi respond.
All right. The process for designation includes a public review process, and it's intended to get feedback from all stakeholders. I was not here at that time, but the commission received all this input and in their best judgment decided to decalendar it. Things may have to happen subsequent to that, including what's happening right now, but in terms of the process, I think that's a very different thing than what we were proposing. And I just want to say two other things. The decalendering or taking off some of these items from the list was not intended to allow for wholesale demolition, and I don't believe that's going to happen. I think the record of this has already shown. There have been many times when projects have been taken off the list and very few actually end up demolished. I think the other thing is that just in terms of preservation, and we're talking about preservation in all neighborhoods. So we're talking about preservation in Harlem. We're actively looking at our historic district and the extension of Mount Morris Park. We have active surveys and are looking at individual designations over there. We have historic districts in Crown Heights and in Bedford Stuy and in the Upper West Side. We have a very large agenda, and those are the things that we want to move forward with.
Now, Margaret, even if something isn't destroyed, it could still be changed a lot, can't it? If something is landmarked, it pretty much has to be preserved as it is?
Well, actually, that's not entirely true. It makes the process much more regulated and much more subject to public review. But there are a number of landmark districts. Tribeca is one. I happen to live there, where changes have been made to buildings within the district that I think the Landmarks has, to their credit, has been encouraging of making historically contextual without reproducing the past. And I think that's a really important part of what they do. Landmarking, it is a political process. I think there's no mistake about it.
And who decides mostly, or are people like architectural historians and others other than city officials invited to the hearings?
They are open. They are public hearings. There are very educated people on the commission. Meenakshi could give you a better idea of who's currently on the commission, but these are people who are well-versed in the contextual issues of landmarks in the city. I think there are occasional mistakes that get made. There are occasional political pressures that come to bear, but I think that all in all, it actually is a good process.
Right. Thank you, Margaret. We do have a commission that's made up of experts, and they come from various fields. We have architects, we have realtor, we have a historian, we have an urban planner. And I would agree with Margaret on that point, that part of our jurisdiction is to look at changes within historic buildings or designated landmarks. And I don't think that the commission historically or now takes the position that everything is set in stone, that there is areas for change, and that these buildings within our jurisdiction have the ability to adapt to new ways and new technologies.
Now, listeners have been calling in a lot, asking about a question that I asked that never really got answered. Why have these buildings been on the calendar for so long without coming up for a hearing? Was it just a matter of priorities when the – I mean, does the commission meet so infrequently that it just can't go over all of these buildings?
The commission has it has an enormous workload, and it is a voluntary commission. But some of the reasons why these buildings remain on the calendar is because over time the situations have changed, and they were put on the calendar at one point. Other things may have happened, and they have not become priorities anymore.
So with St. John the Divine, that is that not just not a priority, even though it is?
St. John's the Divine is something that we're actually, it's on the list, but we didn't take it off the list, so we are actively looking at that. And it of course, begs the question, why hasn't been designated as yet? But that's something that we're not taking off the list, and so we are looking at that.
I think one of the things that many of the preservation groups and MAS as well has been recognizing the fact that Meenakshi mentioned this, that there are 31,000 properties that have been landmarks since the Landmarks Commission was started. It's a huge, huge amount of the city to take care of, and so I think one of the things is the things that have been priorities have been are addressed, or if there's a lot of pressure, then they're addressed in a somewhat timely fashion, although the process itself doesn't have, we think, enough limits to it in terms of time. But these things have just accumulated because I think the commission doesn't have the staff that it needs. It doesn't have the resources that it needs. This is, it's like maintaining a much larger inventory than they used to have to look at when they first started.
One of the complaints that people often have is that when new construction goes up, it just does not fit in with the rest of the neighborhood. When new buildings are put in historic districts, must there be an attempt to have it fit into the architectural style of the pre-existing building?
I think that the commission is open to that. Architects may bring different philosophies to their new buildings. Sometimes they are looking at more traditional forms and style that emulate what is there and is the predominant context. Others will look at modern interpretations. So I think that, first of all, development takes place in historic districts all the time, and I think the response in terms of them architecturally vary as well.
Well, the last time we talked about this, many people called in to complain about what's happened at Astor Place near Cooper Union.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole area is not designated as a historic district,
right?
Only a couple of buildings.
Right.
Well, there's a neighborhood over there, but it may have not captured the site that was under controversy.
I think that when there is a landmark district in place, that it often does help with the review process, that sometimes the buildings, because they do go through public review, I think there's a frustration that sometimes it takes too long. But I think in general, some of the buildings that come out of that process are better than in places where there is no review. I mean, we've been talking about some of the issues on 57th Street and some of the places where there's lots of large-scale development going on that is not subject to any type of review.
Those skinny buildings that are going up on 57th Street in that corridor.
But I agree.
Did you even have to comment on those things? Does the Landmarks Preservation Commission
I think there was
get called in?
There were concerns about whether they were designation worthy, but there were not individual designations at that time, except for, I think, one, and that we looked at the proposal for that. But I think it was something that Margaret said about the list and why it remains there and why we can't move it forward. I think there are a couple of things there. Some of them are just not priorities and nobody's brought it on to our attention. That's one thing. I think the second thing is that many of those properties on the list have other kinds of protections in place or are not vulnerable and are not really the priority of the agency. There are others where I think we'd want to probably do some more research. And I think that for us as an agency, given our resources, it was a call as to see where we should allocate our resources. I think we're, as an agency myself, am very committed to trying to address the issue of this backlog.
And a listener on Twitter asks, does the mayor's office have to sign off for a building to be one, calendared, and two, earmarked? I mean, landmark. That's the way it seems to be in Coney Island.
Right. That is not true. So let me just clarify what the process is. It's the commission staff and the commission that identifies, based on requests that are come from a variety of people, what should get on the calendar. The commission votes, and it does not need to be a quorum or require notification. It goes through a public hearing where we receive input, and as Margaret said, there are many informed New Yorkers who come for these hearings, but it's for anyone. And then when it's designated by the commission, it does go to the City Planning Commission for an advisory report and then goes to the City Council. And the City Council finally can either reverse what the commission designated or support it.
What happens when the owner of a landmark building really does not want that to happen?
Well,
do they have any control over the situation?
They can oppose it, and they can, and depending on who they are and what their powers are, they can oppose it. But ideally, the city can, over their objection, designate it anyway if they feel it's
right.
Important enough.
I think they're one of the stakeholders who will opine during a public hearing process. And I would agree with Margaret that it's not necessary that the owner has to support it for us to designate it. In fact, recently we did a designation where the owner did not support it, but the commission designated it.
Now, the beginning of all of this was the destruction of Penn Station, the possibility that Grand Central would also be torn down. In discussing Penn Station, which had been an incredible success initially, in the last years, it was losing a lot of money. It was gorgeous architecturally, but it was losing a lot of money. And there were no plans for coming up with new ways of funding
right.
it or repurposing it. So how do you deal with something like that?
I think that's partially the job of the city when there is something like that that has a lot of value to the civic world at large. And that was a hugely important transportation hub. It was a place of great civic pride and beauty. And I think there are ways right now. I think we look sometimes to our public-private partnerships, our private partnerships with the real estate community and with development community, philanthropic communities to help us to fund those things.
So what's the solution to this backlog? You getting more funding so you can hire more people?
I think there are a couple of things. One is that we put out a proposal. I think we've heard concerns, and it's clear people care deeply about their neighborhoods, but they also care deeply about places of special regard. I think we want to hear their input, and I think we want to step back a bit and come up with a plan that we can get support.
But what would the Municipal Arts Society like to see change in this process?
Well, we would, for the decalendaring piece, we would like to have a review of everything on that list. We've been speaking with the borough president's office, with other elected officials, and with other preservation groups. And I think everyone agrees that there needs to be a review of this list, and we need to look at all of the reasons why they're on the calendar and whether, as Meenakshi says, some of them are protected in other ways, so they might be easily removed. But I think the things that we're concerned about, I think, should remain on the list and go through the normal process. I think we should come up with a way that this doesn't build up over time again, and we should also set a time limit. I think 2 weeks was a little bit on the short side, but I think something between 2 weeks and 20 years is doable here.
Right, and just to comment on moving forward, I think at least under my leadership, I don't think we ever want to find ourselves in a situation like this where we have this backlog. And I think I'm committed that as we have new projects that are calendared and as they move forward, they do that in a timely manner. And I just want to point out that in the few months while I've been here, we have calendared a special historic district. We've had our hearing, and we're moving to designation within a period of 2 months. And the way for me to, I think, bring public trust is to show in my record as we move forward that is how we will be looking at designations.
My great thanks to my two guests, Meenakshi Srinivasan, Chair of the New York City Landmarks Commission, and Margaret Newman, Executive Director of the Municipal Arts Society. We will be posting a list of some of the things that listeners have suggested.
We'll definitely look at it.